So when I'm preparing for a sermon, and I find that I'm getting bored, I know that the boredom means I need to dig a bit deeper. Preparing for the sermon on the topic of hospitality, I was getting bored. It may have been because I preached a sermon to you all 2 years ago on radical hospitality. I talked about going out of our way to welcome the stranger by decentering ourselves and embracing difference. Welcoming diversity is such a basic tenet of Unitarian Universalism. And maybe that's why I was getting bored. It's basic. UU 101, right? We say, come, come, whoever you are. We say, cast the circle wide. We say, we need not think alike to love alike. And all of this is so true and basic, fundamental to who we are. And if we go deeper, we see that the way we make sure that this radical hospitality truly remains open to all is, paradoxically, to set limits. The limits are called our covenant. We agree with one another on certain kinds of behavior, certain boundaries for how we relate to one another. I say this in our newcomers drop-in circle each month all the time, that it is an unfortunate misconception that to be a Unitarian Universalist, you can believe whatever you want. You heard that before? Well, y'all are the folks that you can just believe whatever you want, right? So it is true we are not a creedal faith. We do not all have to believe the same thing. But we are a covenantal faith. So if a person's beliefs cause them to relate to others in a way that falls outside our covenant, it ends up creating an unwelcoming environment for all. There's the paradox. In order to maintain a space that is open and welcoming to all, there are sometimes we have to place limits, not on certain people, not necessarily on certain beliefs, but on certain behaviors. So the philosopher Karl Popper defined this paradox in 1945 as the paradox of tolerance. He said, unlimited tolerance will lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. In this formulation, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophies. As long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion, suppression would certainly be unwise. But we should claim the right to suppress them if necessary, for it may easily turn out they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument. But denounce all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it is deceptive, and teach them to answer arguments by the use of their fists or pistols. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant. So a more modern way of putting this paradox of tolerance, often repeated these days by those on the margin of our society, comes from the young black gay writer Robert Jones Jr., who says, we can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression, denial of my humanity and right to exist. It may sound harsh and frankly against our religion when he says that in this case he need no longer love them. Personally, I believe in the spiritual practice of nurturing love for all. After all, we just engaged in a meditation where we sent love even to the difficult people in our lives. But I imagine that by this statement, Robert Jones Jr. means that he doesn't have a laissez-faire attitude toward those who believe he doesn't have a right to exist. As UUs, we do believe that the young black gay man has a right not only to exist, but to thrive. just as we do the poor Latina transgender woman and the white straight male. All have inherent worth and dignity, as we say each Sunday in our covenant. We also covenant each week, and join with me if you remember it by heart, this part. We also covenant each week to promote justice, equity, compassion in all aspects of life and living, to recognize the interdependent web of all existence. We then have the beautiful and important task of struggling together to figure out what those commitments mean and to live them out in the world. Another thing I say in our newcomers drop-in circle each month is that we Unitarian Universalists are trying to do a unique thing, to create as wide a space as possible while still standing for something. So the paradox is that if we create a space that is too wide, too laissez-faire, then we don't stand for anything. Actually, that's not true, because in fact, neutrality does not exist. What ends up happening instead is, like the philosopher Karl Popper argued, the intolerant voices end up holding court. Before we know it, we have become hospitable to only a select few and inhospitable to most. So our covenantal agreements are essential to our capacity to be a faith of hospitality, to be people of hospitality. So again, covenant doesn't set limits on who we are, but on how we can be with one another. But boy, oh boy, sometimes those of us, myself included, who believe in love and peace and kindness, have a hard time understanding limits, understanding the word no, as part of our work of creating that love and peace and kindness. So take, for example, the book, The Giving Tree. And I apologize in advance if I'm about to ruin this book for you. I know it is a very well-beloved book. But to be fair to Shel Silverstein, who Jane read some of his words at the beginning of our service, many literary critics think that the world has mostly totally misunderstood this book. If you have never seen this book or need a refresher, it's the story of a boy and a tree as the boy grows up to an old man. It starts out well, the boy and the tree enjoying playing together and the tree providing the boy with shade and apples. And the boy loved the tree, and the tree loved the boy, it says, and the tree was happy. But then the boy grows up and says to the tree, I am too big to climb and play. I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money. Can you give me some money? The tree offers all of her apples so he can sell them. Did I mention the tree is female? So the boy goes and sells the apples and makes money and is happy, but it doesn't end there. She keeps asking him to come and play, but he keeps needing more to be happy. And the tree keeps offering, and he keeps taking. He cuts off all her branches to build a house. He cuts down her entire trunk to make a boat. In the end, she is only a stump, and the book closes with him sitting on her stump. And it says the tree is happy. But literary critics say that Shel Silverstein never wrote happy endings, that he always had some mischief up his sleeve. So who knows? But as I interpret it, I see a parable about a skewed view of hospitality, of love, of giving. Was the tree really happy? It seemed like she wanted the boy to play, to rest in her shade, to eat a few apples. After giving so much to the boy, was she then able to provide any other children or people or purpose, or only exist for this one boy? And was the boy or grown man really happy? Was it really in his best interest for the tree to provide for him in this way? So here's a retelling of the story. Y'all ready? This is by my colleague Victoria Weinstein. She says, with apologies to Shel Silverstein, once there was a tree, and she loved a little boy. And every day the boy would come, and he would gather her leaves and make them into crowns and play king of the forest. Time went by, and the boy grew older, and the tree was often alone, which was nice and quiet, but she missed the boy. Then one day the boy came to the tree, and the tree called out to him, "Come, boy, come and climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and eat my apples and play in my shade and be happy." "I am too big to climb and play," said the boy. "I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money. Can you give me some money?" "No chance," said the tree. "I have only leaves and apples." "Why don't you go get a job?" "I hear that the Nature Conservancy is looking for clerical staff. Why don't you apply?" And so the boy applied for the job and stuffed many envelopes and processed many donations to the Nature Conservancy, and the tree was happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time, and the tree was sad. And then one day the boy came back, and the tree shook with joy, and she said, "What took you so long? You don't call, you don't write. How's the job? And tell me, who do you think really has the better environmental record, Stein or Bernie Sanders?" "I am too busy to talk politics with you," said the boy. "I want a house to keep me warm. I want a wife and I want children, so I need a house. Can you give me a house?" "Of course I can't give you a house," replied the tree. "The forest is my house. But you're certainly welcome to pitch a tent on the ground here, and we'll have a great time." "Thanks, but no thanks, tree," said the boy. "Maybe I'll start an intentional community with some friends." "That's the ticket," cheered the tree. "You Americans already have far too many houses. Why build another?" So the boy went off to start a co-op. The tree was happy, and the boy was happy. But the boy stayed away a very long time, and when he came back, the tree was so happy to see him, but all the boy wanted was a boot. "Whoa," said the tree. "I don't like the way you're looking at my trunk there, buddy. You want to travel? You've got legs. Walk. And on the way, why don't you take some of these seeds and plant some more trees? Make like Johnny Appleseed. It'll do us all good." So the boy embraced the tree, took the seeds, and started on his journey. And the tree was happy, really. After a long, long time, the boy came back again. "I'm sorry, boy," said the tree. "You have no more teeth to sink into my apples. You're too fragile to swing in my branches. Your friends are long gone, and your old legs can't take you around as they used to. We both know that you are at the end of your story, and that I will long outlast you. I just wish that I could give you something to comfort you." "I don't need very much," said the boy, now a man. "Just a quiet place to swing and rest." "Well," said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could, "this old tree is good for swinging and resting. Come, boy, tie your hammock on these branches. Come, swing from my arms and rest." And the boy did, and the tree was very happy. So saying no, keeping agreements with ourselves and with our communities, is really about saying yes to what we know is worth affirming. It's about knowing what our principles are, knowing what kinds of beliefs and behaviors encourage or inhibit our ability to live out those principles. Hospitality is about welcoming all into our covenant. It's about the radical kindness of telling one another when we need to get back into covenant. Sometimes it may not feel nice, but it is kind, because we all need help learning how to live. And the better we can learn that and relate to one another, the more healthier the communities will be able to be a part of and to create, and the more mutually nourishing relationships we can enjoy. So the first hymn in our hymn book speaks of the boundaries we must make to create a space of hospitality. "Peace shall walk softly through these rooms, touching our lips with holy wine, till every casual corner blooms into a shrine. with laughter drown the raucous shout. And though these sheltering walls are thin, may they be strong to keep hate out and hold love in. May it be so.